Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. I'm Lynette Ezell along with Tara Melber. And you know, over the years, Tara and I have learned the significance of hearing from and learning from adoptees and former foster children. It just helps give us insight and perspective into the feelings, the emotions, the thoughts that our children may be experiencing. So we're so happy today to be joined in the studio by Crystal Williams. And Crystal grew up in the foster care system. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Crystal's an artist, an inspirational speaker, and an advocate, and she has over 15 years of experience in the foster care system, working with foster and adopted youth, foster and adoptive parents, caseworkers, advocates, and key decision makers across the state of Georgia and nationally. That's impressive, Crystal.
I know. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I'm excited. So, Crystal, tell us a little bit about your story growing up in foster care.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from Memphis.
Oh, I love it. Those are my people.
Yeah. Yep, originally from Memphis, where the barbecue is great.
Yes.
And my biological mom and my sisters and I, we all lived there, and we pretty much lived with our biological family most of the time. So instead of us having our own home, a lot of the times we were staying with relatives or you know, living with friends and that type of thing. I actually don't remember a time growing up outside of foster care having a car or having a home that was ours until we moved to Atlanta. So in Memphis, my mom would leave us home alone a lot. She struggled with her own things, trying to make ends meet for her family. And she actually was the product of a blind mother. So her mother went blind when they were very young.
Wow.
So it was four of them. And my grandmother went blind while my mom was probably around, I'm just going to guess and say like 10 or 12.
So she was young.
Very young.
Right.
Very young. And so so my mom pretty much raised herself. She and her sisters kind of fended for themselves in that time. My grandmother did the best she could. And so my mom started off with a rough beginning. And so whenever I tell this story, I like to just emphasize the fact that it's a lot of times the situations that happen that land a child in foster care have generational roots. And they're not just stemming from, you know, some, you know, bad decision, which it is. It is a bad decision, but there are so many roots, and always emphasizing the fact that the enemy is trying to take out families, trying to take out individuals from the beginning. And so he's sowing those seeds from before even I was even born, before my mom was even born. He was trying to sow seeds that would hinder our family.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so my mom, she had her first child, or her first, she actually had twins.
Wow.
And my older sister, she actually was a twin, and her twin passed away very young. So my mom's now dealing with that, all of the struggles she's having, plus the death of one of her children. And, of course, I wasn't born yet, but by the time I was born, my mom, you know, the two of us, she had my older sister and I, and she was still trying to make ends meet. And she ended up having another child, my baby brother, who also ended up passing away.
Oh, wow.
And so my mom experienced the
tragedy.
The death of two of her
trauma.
Children. And for me, as an adult, I think back on that. I've never really kind of processed and put pieces together until I became an adult of like the trauma that my mom actually experienced.
Yeah.
I know that foster care was difficult for me, but when I think about the trauma my mom experienced, my mom was never in foster care as a kid. She probably should have been. But she was never in foster care as a kid, and she had her struggles that she dealt with. And so here we are, a family now. My mom had three. She had another child after my baby brother passed away. So she had three girls, two of her children had passed away, and she's thinking to herself, what am I going to do to try to make ends meet for my family? And the decision that she made actually changed the trajectory of our entire lives, which was a decision to come to Atlanta from Memphis. And the decision was, you know, basically, we had heard one of my aunts say, Atlanta has clean streets. You know, it's just, she would, my aunt would always come down and play the lottery in Georgia, and she just loved Atlanta. And so we heard all these great stories, and my mom decided, okay, to kind of start over, to kind of get us on a new path, I'm going to move the family to Atlanta. And so we moved here to Atlanta without any support systems. Now, if you remember, in Memphis, we had family. I mean, no one was like super, super well off, but at least we had the connections of family and friends. But coming to Atlanta, there were no connections. And so we basically ended up bouncing around from homeless shelter to homeless shelter. And that's when we ended up in the foster care system.
Wow. And so how old are you at the time?
I was 10. My older sister was 13, and my younger sister wasn't even one yet when we moved to Atlanta.
Wow. So what happened after that? You were at the homeless shelter, and that's when you were removed. Mm-hmm. And so from 10 until, you said that you aged out of the foster system. So were you in different foster homes throughout? Did you go back and forth to your mom?
So our story was a bit different. So we were in the homeless shelters for probably several months. And I warn you guys, my sense of time is a little off thinking back on that time.
We understand.
So I'm like, between the ages of like 15 and 20, something happened, you know? So so basically, we were in homeless shelters for a period of time. And then we ended up getting our own apartment. Mm-hmm. So the homeless shelter helped us get our own apartment. And
so your mom's trying to move forward.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. She's trying to move forward. She's doing the best she can. We actually got our own apartment.
Wow.
And my mom, she would leave us home alone a lot in Memphis. Right. And so here in Atlanta, she apparently had gotten a job that was overnight. And so we were in that new apartment. The caseworker from the homeless shelter who's helping us get furniture and food and stuff like that comes and realizes these children have been home alone for 2-3 days.
Right.
She's a mandated reporter. She has to say something. And so she reported it. We initially went into a group home setting. Now, this
all
was
all three of you with your little toddler sibling?
So my little sister was actually placed somewhere else because of her age.
Oh, okay.
Because of her age, she was placed somewhere else. But my older sister and I were placed in a group home.
Okay.
Which was, again, divided by age. And I was a little rebel, so I, like, screamed until they allowed me to sleep by my sister. And we were in that group home for, I would say, I don't know, a couple of weeks to a couple of months. I mean, again, hard time remembering the time. And then we were placed into a foster home. Okay. And that is actually the reason why I said my story is different is because that's actually the only placements we had.
Okay.
A lot of children who come into foster care bounce around from house to house. I have friends now who had 30 plus placements when they were in foster care.
Wow.
And so that's very rare, especially during that time, like 96, 97 time when we came into care. That time period, I mean, young people had multiple placements.
Okay.
So we moved into that home, and that's the home that we stayed in for the duration of our time in care.
Okay.
I'm still connected with that family now. Mm-hmm. I was actually adopted at the age of 25 by that family.
Wow.
Amazing family. I just got off the phone with my adopted mom and my adopted dad yesterday, inviting them to my graduation. I graduate from grad school tomorrow.
Congratulations.
So just having that support, having that family that I can reach back. And actually, my biological dad called me last night.
Wow.
And he's just like, hey, I heard from your sister, you know. And, you know, so I have those connections now. And there are still some that I'm trying to form. Like my younger sister, she was actually adopted by my maternal aunt very young. And so we lived in different states, and so I'm in the process now of rebuilding those connections. I have sisters and brothers that my dad has where we don't have the same mom that I'm trying to build those connections, you know. And so it's definitely a process of being totally content in this position that God has put me in as a former foster child, as an adopted child, but also feeling that my family is fluid. It's not just my adopted family, whom I love dearly. They mm-hmm. are amazing. But also my biological family right. is a part of who I am.
Sure. Right.
And so it's exciting for me. Mm-hmm. I spent Christmas with them this year in Memphis, and it's exciting for me to be able to see, wow, this is that cousin that mm-hmm. they always said I look like.
Yes.
And this is that aunt. And so it's definitely a process of kind of rebuilding yes. at this time.
Yes. And that's so important because we're seeing it in our home mm-hmm. as well. We're having to reach across the ocean, but it's so important. I'm noticing as we go into young adulthood. My dad did that as well from the same, you know, from the Memphis area too, and just trying to put the pieces together of how my siblings and who looks alike and mm-hmm. who has hands that match.
Absolutely.
And those sorts of things. And those are so important to bring those pieces together.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
They really are. We've found as well that our children who do have some sort of communication with their biological families have had a healthier perspective. And our children who have not had that same opportunity really are always seeming to be searching. And we mm-hmm. want to help them, you know, search and find as much as they possibly can. And recognizing, too, we've said often, you won't fully feel restored. None of us will on this earth until the day that the Lord takes us home and yeah. we're with Him. And then we're fully restored. But any piece of the puzzle that the Lord gives us while we're here on this earth is a gift and yeah. a treasure. And that you're not defined by all the stuff
right.
from your beginnings. Mm-hmm. That you're defined by who you are in Christ. Mm-hmm. And really rooting them in their identity and their foundation there.
Mm-hmm.
So how has your faith helped you walk through all of this stuff?
Yeah. My faith is everything. I mean, just realizing, even when you tell that story about, you know, it's our identity in Christ and all those broken pieces in the past, but it's amazing how God uses the broken pieces.
Yes.
How He uses even that.
Yeah.
And even when I personally make mistakes or, you know, someone makes mistakes and, you know, I don't know what to do with this,
right.
this big mess that is in mm-hmm. front of me. God knows what to do with
right.
it. And a lot of the children in foster care are dealing with the mistakes of other people.
Right.
They're yeah, victims of circumstance, right.
Right. They're dealing with the mistakes of their parents, of their grandparents, those generational mm-hmm. curses. And that's what they're dealing with. And so it's like even in the midst of that, God is, he's so able to take that and make it into a masterpiece.
Right.
Right.
And so for me, I have found that my faith and being able to communicate that through my poetry, which mm-hmm. is what I use, has been freeing. And mm-hmm. so sometimes people will hear me speak on a stage or I'll do poetry and I'll cry mm-hmm. and they're like, oh, she must be sad and broken from her past. Most of the time it's tears of joy.
Yes.
And it's me thinking about, wow, God, like you picked me out of mm-hmm. millions of people and decided that you were going to place me somewhere different and that you were going to, you know, even though it was difficult, it was hard, you were going to place me in a place where I could form all these connections that I otherwise would not have mm-hmm. had an opportunity to have. And it's just mind blowing to think about the level of precision that God has mm-hmm. and the attention to detail. And I'm totally honored every time I get an opportunity to share my story or every time I get an opportunity to talk to young people.
Mm-hmm.
That's my heart as well. Like, I love teenagers. And I feel like that opportunity to speak back and reach back and share my faith with younger people and let young people know that, you know, God is more than able to bring us all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, my faith is definitely everything. And I use it whenever I'm communicating. I share the depth of what God has done and how He is able to, you know, make a masterpiece out of broken pieces.
Mm-hmm.
He does it every minute of every mm-hmm. day for all of us, I tell you. Well, we're talking today with Crystal Williams, who grew up in the foster system in Atlanta. And just continuing this conversation with her. I do have a question because Tara and I just work with foster children. We work with, you know, advocates for foster children. And so there's a lot, you know, we don't know.
Right.
Would you mind sharing about a time or maybe something that was done for you that blessed you or gave you a dose of encouragement when you were in the foster system, maybe your middle school years, those trying middle school years anyway, mm-hmm. when you're being uprooted, just something that sticks out in your mind that was done for you that just gave you hope.
I think for me, I hear a lot of stories, not just youth in foster care, just young people in general, saying that they've had people to say that they would never make it. Like, mm-hmm. you know, someone told me I'd never make it. They told me that I'd be just like my father. And
oh, yeah.
that's surprising to me.
Yes.
Like, it's surprising that someone would say something like that to a young person. And personally, I always had people who were encouraging me and who saw things in me that I didn't even see or believe.
Mm-hmm.
So as a young person growing up in poverty first before foster care, growing up in poverty, there was no time to practice, you know, sports or get involved in music. Mm-hmm. There was no time for that. There was mm-hmm. just survival,
right,
you know.
Right.
And so coming into the foster care system, even though I was in middle school, well, I started off in elementary school, but middle school, high school was the majority of my time.
Right.
Even though I was that age, I wanted to explore stuff. Like mm-hmm. usually you do that with your child when they're young, like you put them in dance and you realize that's not my kid.
Yeah.
That's not your gift, baby.
Yeah.
Let's put you in, you know, basketball or, you know,
right.
so you kind of like play that game with your child early on and try to find out what they're good at. And then when they get in that, you just encourage them and they kind of form this level of expertise in that particular thing. Well, I didn't have that luxury
right.
as a young person growing up in poverty. And so when I got into foster care, that was the first time that I was able to do that exploration.
Right.
Even though my friends had been, you know, involved in this stuff for 5-6 years,
right.
this was the first time I could explore. And so I tried everything. Like, I played basketball in middle school, and basketball is like a big deal in my family. Like, my younger, well, she's older than me, but she's the youngest of my adopted parents' biological children. Her name is Amber. She is like basketball queen.
Oh.
And so
no
she,
pressure or anything.
Right. And I wanted to be like her.
Right.
And so I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to join a basketball team. Not my thing.
Yeah.
Definitely not my thing. I stumbled around. My dad has videos of me like running down the court like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I'm like, I'm so embarrassed. Like, burn those.
Hilarious.
Burn those videos.
That's leverage for your dad.
Prerogative of a parent.
Yeah. Right. And so that wasn't my thing. And I tried tennis because tennis team had short skirts. Like,
oh, cute outfits.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So tried that. That wasn't my thing. And I tried oratory. So I signed up for an oratorical contest where we had to pick a topic on the Constitution and we had to write a speech. And then that was the first part. Then the second part was like you had to do a speech from memory. And I did that and I was good.
I bet.
I was good and I was like, this may be my thing.
Right.
And so then I got involved with that and just kind of started to gravitate towards the arts and opportunities to speak. And I was my family supported me all the way. Even when I joined the dance team and I was one of the flag girls with the band. And they were in the stands.
Right.
They were in the stands and they were supporting me. And I
remember. Whole new world for you.
Right. I remember my dad, because we always had a lot of kids in the house, like a lot of kids. And I remember one game, it was halftime, and there was tons of people in the stands. And I remember after the game, he came up to me. He was like, I'm so mad. I went to the concession stand with one of these kids and I missed it. I missed the halftime. But for me, I mean, it was just having people in the stands, having people supporting my gift and even supporting me when I stumbled. And so that to me was just powerful to have that. And so I think every young person in foster care needs a whole rally of people in the stands rooting for them and cheering them on and encouraging them to keep moving forward in whatever it is that God has called them to do, and even to encourage them in the stumbling around until they get into that place where God has called them.
Right, because as we said, it's a whole new world for them. They've not had any choices before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know with my children, it was with one of mine, it was just awakening, amazing to see that just to be able to choose your clothes.
Right.
Yep.
You know, things that we take for granted.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So your older sister, was she with you in the same placement all through?
She was.
So, but you were adopted by this family when you were 25.
Mm-hmm.
So does she have the same sort of relationship? No?
She did not. So I love talking about my sister. I love talking about her because she was so different. Like,
right.
Like, literally, I always say, if she was here doing this interview with you, you would be like, did y'all live in the same house? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. She was a bully, which I always make fun of her. She wasn't really a bully, but she was a bully. But the thing is, there was this dynamic of my older sister had been my mother.
Mm-hmm.
She had been my mother. Like, she had raised us. She had fought for us to get food. She made sure we were clothed, even beyond her taking care of herself. Like, I didn't know until I was an adult that my sister couldn't read on her eighth grade level when she got into foster care. She was in eighth grade.
Who had time for that?
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
She was raising kids, mm-hmm. you know. And so, no, she did not. She didn't get adopted by that family. She clashed with my foster mom a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a teenager, like she was a regular, like she had stuff she was dealing with, things she was thinking. And she wasn't as vocal as I am. Mm-hmm. She was more of an introverted person. She still is very introverted. And so she didn't, you know, she didn't get involved and mesh with the family like that until later.
Oh, uh-huh.
And her
role had been relinquished.
She'd never been a child.
Right.
Exactly.
She didn't have that opportunity to be a child. We've seen that a lot.
We see it a lot, right.
Mm-hmm. And it is so hard because you want to say it's okay for you to be a teenager mm-hmm. and not have to be a caregiver. But it's almost like, these are my people and
yep.
I'm going to take care of them. And so it is a clash.
This is the only part of her identity that she could own.
Right.
You know, she could own that piece to free me up to be, you know, to be creative and you go out and do, and I'll own this piece of being the mother. And that's, mm-hmm. I own that. So don't, you know, when I come in a foster home, don't take that away from me.
Mm-hmm.
You have to.
It's her identity.
Exactly. So with her, she definitely had a different experience than I had. Mm-hmm. Even if you have siblings in a placement, mm-hmm. their interaction in that home and their experiences will be different. They will handle things differently. They will vocalize things differently. And so my sister and I were very different in the way that we kind of meshed into the household. But now my sister is an amazing, she's very creative. She's a mother. She is an entrepreneur.
Oh, wow.
She has five gorgeous children.
Wow.
They're all on the honor roll.
Oh, my
That's
goodness.
Awesome.
She was just made to be a mother.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
I love my babies. And I was over there. I was over there this past weekend. And the youngest one, she was like, Auntie, I'm in gifted. And I was like,
oh,
oh
wow.
You're so sweet.
I love that.
So
That's
she's
amazing.
Very, she takes education seriously. And you can think back
sure.
on
As
her
why.
Experience. And my adopted dad actually used to make her. He used to sit her at the table and make her read the newspaper to him aloud after school for about an hour. And he, when someone else would walk in, he would tell her she could stop so that she wouldn't have
right.
to be embarrassed that she couldn't read well. But he would make her read it for an hour. And now that is affecting the way that she raises her children. Her children read. Her next to the youngest child wants to start a Facebook Live of her reading to children who don't have people to read to them.
Oh, how cool is that?
And I'm just like, this is amazing to see
Only
how God
the Lord does that.
Uses that.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
Crystal, thank you so much for joining us today. You can find more information about Crystal's ministry in our show notes at crystallwilliams.com. And you can also purchase her book called Stronger, An Inspirational Journal. We look forward to talking to you some more.
You've been listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, a ministry of the North American Mission Board and funded through the Cooperative Program. This month and through the end of the year, we would like to ask you to consider giving to the Minister's Adoption Fund. This fund provides grants to Southern Baptist ministers and missionaries who are adopting. By giving financially, you are able to be a part of seeing many children become beloved sons and daughters. For more information, visit sinrelief.org.